Really ambitious project here for our first Sunday night edition of this new season. Not only are we going to talk about all 30 teams, but we are going to try to be exclusively positive, focusing only on good things that we're able to find. Certain teams, including those that may have fired their coach after compiling the worst point differential in NBA history over the first three games by 17 points. That may be difficult for, but as long as we don't mention those teams by name, I think it's fine, right, guys?
Yeah.
Sure. Sure.
And that tepid yeah was our intern Liam Doyle, who's going to help us out with a couple of these teams here. Before we get started, I want to remind you we're sponsored today by RX Bar. For 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/capspace and enter promo code capspace at checkout. So you get to actually use capspace twice and they'll get you 25% off your first order. All right, Liam, let's get started here. Liam, by the way, was one of my students at Sports Business Classroom, won a rabid competition among Sports Business Classroom students to be the intern this year. We're actually paying him too, so hopefully he'll do a good job. He interrupts me, which is he's already getting too big for his britches here. But yeah, so we gave you the Hawks and later the Magic to talk about, Liam. So where are they at record wise and what are the good things that stood out to you about them?
So they're 1-2 so far. I'd say probably the biggest bright spot on the team so far has got to be John Collins. He's the rookie out of Wake Forest. 57% true shooting percentage and 22% usage percentage. He's playing mostly the five off the bench, but he's playing some with the starters as well. He's been really effective as a rim roller. You know, he's quick, he's, you know, really mobile, he's got a really quick jump, so he's a good lob target rolling down the lane. And surprisingly, he's been okay switching on to guards on defense in general. Defensively not so strong, but at least he's put in a solid effort there and has been able to stay with some of the guards like Dennis Smith on some switches. He's had a couple positive passes too. He wasn't a very strong passer in college, but he had a couple nice plays. He won one where he caught it on the short roll and hit the weak side corner for a three. So just some field plays that I feel like he didn't show as much in college. So I think, you know, some good positive showings from him so far.
Yeah, and you'd think that if anyone can coach him up to be an effective player, it would be the Hawks. And I've seen those things as well. I thought he was pretty good today. I watched their game against Brooklyn, showed some signs. The biggest thing about him, we knew this about him coming out of college, but seeing it in the NBA is always encouraging, is his rebounding. He really pursues out of area, especially on the offensive glass. He's really a relentless rebounder. And they've done a good job. You mentioned he's playing at center. They've always played him next to some kind of a shooter. At least I haven't liked the lineups with him and Scala as much, but he usually plays with Ilyasova. They haven't tried him yet as a center in some real small lamps. But what else you got here?
So Dennis Schroeder, his stats overall haven't been that good. He had a bad game today against Brooklyn, but in the first game he was really good attacking Dirk Nowitzki off the pick and roll. Obviously he looks very explosive. He's been really good from the mid-range. I think he's 45% from there, 48% from mid-range so far this year. He's taken a lot of them, which may be more than you'd like, but he's doing a good job there, and he is able to get shots in the paint, just blowing by his defender and, you know, beating the big on pick and roll. He had a good time attacking Frank Kaminsky, I think, in the fourth quarter of the Charlotte game. So when he gets a big that isn't as adept at, you know, protecting the rim, he's good attacking that. But outside of that, he's kind of struggled in the paint. But he's being a last.
Hey, now slow down here. Don't be too negative.
No, I wouldn't.
it's a young season. We're focusing exclusively on positives. It's impossible not to do that. I'm sure we will. Danny and I will fall into the same trap, no doubt.
Right. Well, and if one more small thing I wanted to point out, Dwayne Dedman, 2-4 from three, which is pretty shocking. I had no idea that was coming when I saw that, but doesn't look too bad from there.
Yeah, he was firing away. Bob Rathbun today was like, Dwayne Dedman, shooting machine, which I really enjoyed. But yeah, those corner threes, he was shooting them with no hesitation in that Brooklyn game today. Any other bright spots for the 1-2 Hawks?
Torian Prince has been all right. Okay defense. He's really good getting out in transition, and he's a good, you know, weapon there, but I'll leave it at that because I don't want to get on the negative side. So I'd say that's about it for the Hawks.
All right, we'll move on to the 1-2 Boston Celtics. Danny, what do you got on the Celtics here? What stood out to you on the positive side for the Boston Celtics?
I've been pleased and enjoyed that Brad Stevens has reacted to the Gordon Hayward injury by trying a whole bunch of different guys, because Boston had this unusual situation where they actually have a ton of wings. They don't have a ton of wings that are as good as Gordon Hayward, but no one does. But so they tried out, you know, Ojeleye's played about 20 minutes. Abdel Nader's played 18. Jabari Bird actually had, I think he had like 14 minutes in one game against the Sixers. Looked okay. And so I've liked that he's done that, because they're looking for answers now, and the best way to look for answers is to try to find him wherever you can.
Yeah, I think one of the things, maybe the reason he went to Bird, who's on a two-way with them right now, and we've actually seen a lot of two-way guys across the league get more playing time because the clock hasn't actually started on their 45 days. Only once the D-League starts do the 45 days count. Yeah, yeah. So the, all these, and I mean, we've seen like Alex Caruso with the Lakers, and we've seen quite a few two-way guys, Mike James with the Suns, get more playing time. I think maybe artificially more playing time just because coaches are like, hey, you know what, it's early in the year. And also maybe those guys aren't that much below sort of the 13, 14, 15 guys on the roster. Kind of the lower you get on the roster, the less differentiation there's going to be between guys who are just out of the NBA. So maybe some of these guys earned it in camp. And also though they're like, hey, these guys are gonna be gone in a little bit, we don't want to start the clock on them, we might actually need them at times later, so maybe this is the chance to find out if we can count on these guys later on if someone goes down.
Yeah, that could certainly be the case. And Boston, you know, they're gonna have to figure out their identity throughout this, but they do have a lot of guys that are worth trying. And I was a big believer in Ojeleye in particular, and his strength makes him a more versatile player, and they're going to probably be switching a lot more, and so having somebody who can defend bigger dudes than his, you know, then his height is going to be valuable in that whole process.
Yeah, also for them, Marcus Morris has missed these first three games. We knew that coming into the season. I think he'll help them a lot. They, part of the reason I think they went to Bird, number one, is because Marcus Smart injured his ankle, but number two, because Morris is out, and they really just needed someone who could hit a shot. But it looks like Morris still is going to be out another week or so. He's going to be reevaluated in a week. So Brad Stevens, you know that he's using everyone on the roster. He's going to have to continue to do that. The good news for them, I think, is that Kyrie and Horford haven't shot all that well yet, and I think both those guys are poised to improve. So if they can just stay afloat during this time with Morris out, you know, try to just go 500, they had a nice win against the Sixers, they should be in decent shape. All right, so what I'm going to do here, actually, I'm going to set a timer for 3 minutes going forward, so we can keep this up. We'll get to the 2-1 Brooklyn Nets momentarily, but first from the aforementioned RX Bar. RX Bar, new sponsor for us, a whole food protein bar made with a few simple clean ingredients, all of which serve a purpose. I really like that they put basically every single ingredient on the outside of the package for each bar. They're perfect for a breakfast on the go, if you're having a snack at the office. And when I was actually working, I would usually not eat breakfast because I'm like not hungry right when I get up. It usually takes me a couple of hours. So something like this would have been perfect for me. Just have that in the morning, get something to tide me over until lunch. If you're one of our Silicon Valley Bay Area cohabitants here, where you don't get to work until 10:30, maybe have a little snack there and then just grab lunch from your beautiful Google or Facebook cafeteria afterwards. Actually, my fiance was doing some yoga. She had her friend over. They both had one afterwards, said it tasted great. I really enjoyed mine as well. My favorite so far, because I love peanut butter, the peanut butter chocolate. So give these a shot. Whether you like sweet or savory, chocolate or fruit flavors, then an RX bar exists for you. What you want to do to get started with them, let them know that you came from us. Go to rxbar.com/capspace, and that'll let you see all the flavors. And then when you check out, make sure you enter that promo code CAPSPACE at checkout. They'll get you 25% off your first order. That's rxbar.com/CAPSPACE, promo code CAPSPACE. Get double the CAPSPACE with RX Bar. That's rxbar.com/CAPSPACE, promo code CAPSPACE. So I think the best thing you can say about this Brooklyn team, despite the demise of Jeremy Lin in the first game, it's a fun team to watch right now, I think.
Their game against the Hawks was just a blast. I really did enjoy it. And one of the big reasons was Jared Allen. Jared Allen, somebody we saw at the 2016 Hoop Summit, not the, you know, the most dynamic big, especially in the league right now, but he works hard, he has good instincts, and I really liked one play in particular where he was guarding Schroeder, and Schroeder was driving, and he gave him enough ground so that I didn't think Schroeder was going to just pull up for a shot. And then when he got closer to the rim, he just blocked the layup. And I really like it when a big can do that. Never got close to fouling him, but was always in control of the possession.
Yeah, Allen, with a huge wingspan, quick on his feet out on the perimeter. If you think of him, kind of his body type, he's a little similar to like a John Henson in terms of his shot blocking, but he's got better feet than Henson and a little bit more height, and I think he can put more weight on his frame eventually. He's also kind of like John Henson a little bit offensively at this point, though. I think that's what's really going to be the important thing, is working on his explosiveness and his hands inside to where he can finish. So he is getting more aggressive. He tried to dunk a couple that he just wasn't able to put down. So I appreciated that from him. But I think he might already be the best center on the roster. Although I will say that Mozgov has not looked bad. Like, he's taken a few threes. He's kind of a klutz inside, but he'll go after offensive rebounds. And then the Hawks had a lot of trouble scoring. We're allowed to talk bad about teams once it's not their section, by the way. The Hawks had a lot of trouble scoring over him in the lane. Schroeder, I think, was only 1 out of 7 before he sprained his ankle at the rim, and Mozgov had a big part of that. You know, I don't think he's ever going to live up to that contract, but, you know, he's not like a horrible player. Like, I think he's totally fine as a rotation guy. Maybe not a starter, but as a rotation guy.
Other quick things to mention, Damari Carroll has looked a lot better physically, which is very, very important. And D'Angelo Russell is growing into the role. He had a couple of beautiful lefty passes to Rondae Hollis-Jefferson in this game, including, I think it was one in transition, one in the half court, that really stood out.
Yeah, that was really nice. And Carroll, just his activity has been unbelievable in both that Magic game, and then he had three steals and 2 blocks today, 17 points, got to the foul line 10 times, a lot of them just on hustle plays. He really just looks athletically like he did. And, you know, I was talking with Christian Pelletier on Twitter, and, you know, I'm not sure whether he just feels better, you know, after having really like a whole off season to train now, because remember, you know, he missed most of that first season, and then last year he still didn't look great, but, or whether just being more involved in the offense, because, you know, nobody except Lowry and DeRozan and maybe Valanciunas are that in Toronto. Whatever it is, he looks much more comfortable, much better defensively, getting out and running with this team. He looks great. And then D'Angelo Russell, I think, has been about as good as could have been hoped as well so far.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If we're going to keep on the 3-minute mark, let's move on to the Hornets. The Hornets are 1-1, and their win was a crazy swing game. It was against the Hawks. They were down 20, I think it was in the first half, and then they roared back, had a big third quarter, 1-4, and, you know, it turned into a Dwight Howard revenge game. He played 33 minutes, which is a lot, 20 points, 15 rebounds, and they're not going to necessarily need that from him every game, but they can certainly welcome it, especially now with Batum being out for a while.
Yeah, that's true. And I thought Dwight really looked spry in that game, in part because I'm sure he was going against an Atlanta team that dumped him for even worse contracts than he is. And especially just dunks around the rim as well. Atlanta, not a team that has a ton of heft on the interior, so he was able to really go to work on the offensive glass, get up for some alley-oops. He had some really nice dunks as well. Was getting deep post position. I think usually when a player is having a revenge game, they'll try and find him a little bit more too. That helped, but it definitely was a solid start for him, and he's not going to have that type of a game every night. But I think just the fact that he, having had this game early, will help him to be more engaged. And it's just, you know, we saw him on that night, but, you know, he didn't look great at times in the preseason. So it's going to be, I think it's really kind of a day-to-day thing for him on how do his knees feel, how does his back feel. But it certainly looked good on Friday, and he played those huge number of minutes, in part because Cody Zeller was out. But then Frank Kaminsky played a lot as well, and they made their big comeback in part when Kaminsky was on the floor in the second half.
They've also been playing without not only Michael Carter-Williams, but Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. So once they get a more normal perimeter rotation, I think that will also really help them defensively and offensively to put other guys in the right roles.
Yeah, I mean, but they've been getting enough out of Dwayne Bacon, who's been starting. They've been getting enough out of Monk. I mean, it's been Bacon and Lamb starting recently. And so to at least, you know, they did lose to the Pistons on opening night, but to at least like stay afloat here with all those guys out, Batum, of course, on the bench as well. You know, I think their goal, again, I think in similar fashion to the Celtics, if they can come out of this stretch with Zeller missing time, Batum, MKG, and be around 500, then maybe they can take off when those guys come back. And Kemba Walker has continued to sizzle, averaging 25 points a game. He has made 5 of his 11 three-point attempts so far on the season, and getting to the foul line at a fantastic rate, 12.5 free throw attempts per game.
Let's move on to the Chicago Bulls. They're 0-2, and I'll say their biggest positive is that lottery reform does not kick in until 2019.
We don't have to use all 3 minutes for these teams, by the way. It's just that's just the limit. I have liked what I've seen from Lauri Markkanen.
Yes, so have I.
However, what have you liked about what you've seen from him?
Well, I think that he looks like the game, and I'm going to say this about a couple of these rookies, it doesn't seem like the game is too fast for him offensively. He's getting to his spots, and he's not rushing as much, and his jump shot looks projectable from the NBA line. That was something we noted in Summer League as well.
Yeah, and obviously that was clear in Eurobasket. He shoots relatively with no hesitation, but when his jumper wasn't falling against the Spurs, he impressed some of the local writers by getting to the rim a lot. In the second half, he's not like your kind of like Euro wuss. You know, he's not a great defensive rebounder, but he's got good definition. I think he can continue to get stronger. The way he moves his feet is impressive. Greg Popovich actually had some nice things to say about him. He actually held up pretty well in the post against Pau Gasol. They tried to go to Gasol against him in the post, and Gasol didn't have an amazing game. He was only 3 out of 8 in that game. So I thought he looked good there, looked good moving his feet and then getting to the rim. We'll see what happens when the entire league figures out that he goes left every single time off a closeout. You know, that's going to be something he's going to have to get better at going to his right. But I think that's something where just as a young player, when you're not being scouted every night and you're in college, or you know, you're in a international setting where the league just doesn't know you as well, you're not forced to abandon that. But we've seen guys be able to, some guys never fix it, but other guys are able to. Like Dennis Smith, for example, went left all the time at NC State, and now he doesn't do that anymore. He's really improved that. So that's good for the Bulls. I think Robin Lopez has been okay. Maybe he could be a potential trade candidate for them.
Oh, and I like that they picked up Kay Felder.
Yeah, yeah, we mentioned that he looked okay. His passing, maybe not quite there yet, but at least, you know, he's improved his skill level. It seems like he's able, more comfortable going right, and they desperately need his shot creation.
That's exactly where I was going to go.
And for the Bulls, this may not be good for the Bulls, but it's good for Justin Holiday. He got to be the anchor of the starting lineup introductions on Friday. So great for Justin Holiday.
NBA champion Justin Holiday. Don't forget it.
The Cleveland Cavaliers are 2-1, and I think, you know, what really stands out to me about this team is just how great the chemistry is with LeBron and Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith. Like, when you surround LeBron with shooters, like, it remains totally unstoppable, and, you know, that's great news for the Cavs, right?
It was an absolute delight to watch when they went on that big run, which was basically Kyle Korver moving into spots and LeBron passing him open, because he just throws such hard passes, and you're just sitting there going, man, I love these moments. I wish I could just keep them going for such a long time.
Korver did change that game, though, against Milwaukee, in all seriousness. But like, coming off of screens, he definitely caused big problems for the Bucks. And I thought Kevin Love, especially as the Eastern Conference gets smaller and smaller, and as he works at center and as more teams switch against them, he can start being even more effective in the post. And there aren't even that many big wings in the East, where if you're going to switch, you know, a LeBron Love pick and roll, that really can guard him down there. He still looks like he's in excellent shape as well. And so that's good to see from Love. I will say this, that this is slightly critical, but it always seems like Love has this great first quarter and then they never go back to him. It's like, oh, we got to establish this guy as a big guy. And then, you know, he had 11 points, was completely unstoppable in that first quarter against Milwaukee. And then, you know, he's got 13 points at the half and takes like one shot in the second quarter. Like, he goes out of the game, and then they just, you know, never really seem to go back to him. But, you know, I think he's poised to have a pretty big year potentially.
He is good enough to go back to. Let's put it that way. Let's phrase it in the positive. The other thing with them is just that LeBron is an absolute demon when he's on. My favorite play, other than the Korver stuff, so of that Milwaukee game, was when he was basically just standing there and decided to block Giannis because he was in the right place, and his instincts are just completely ridiculous. And LeBron consistently reminds you of how special he is.
Yeah, I mean, that play, and it's funny because guys are always scared around him, and he doesn't really jump that often anymore, especially during the regular season. But even the chance that he could, you'll see guys miss a lot of layups when he's around. I mean, even that play, like, he was sort of like, you know, I'm like just in chill mode, Giannis is gonna go right by me, and then he's like, oh yeah, I could just like get up here and block this thing. And so he just rose off the ground so quickly. And while he has said that, hey, you know, I'm not in the type of cardio shape I want to be in, because he missed time with that ankle injury, and he said it might take him as much as 2 weeks to get back to where he wants to to be, that, you know, he looks still every bit the player. You know, he hit some threes against Milwaukee as well as some big threes to thwart Milwaukee's comeback. So he looks like every bit the player he was last year. And when you're a guy in your early 30s who's playing at the level that he still is, you know, it's good to see him come back and look like the same guy yet again this season so far.
The Detroit Pistons are 2-1. And I cracked up a little bit because my favorite moment so far from them was in a game in the one loss they had against the Wizards. I really liked what I saw from Luke Kennard. He, again, like I said with Markkanen, doesn't seem like this is too big for him. He was able to rely on his jump shooting and the respect that they have for that to take a couple dribbles and get to better looks, make some nice passes. And I'm not sure what his long-term role is, like if he can ever be that guy good enough to be a starter, but every single team in the NBA needs players that make good decisions with the ball in their hands.
Yeah, and he made some tough shots off the dribble as well. His floater looks good. He can go either direction. Defensively, it's probably always going to be a struggle for him, but he at least got some minutes in these last two games and has looked reasonably good during that time period. I liked it as well. I didn't get to watch that whole game, but I saw some of his highlights and it was impressive. And he's someone who probably has gotten discussed less than any player drafted in the lottery because everyone has been fawning over Donovan Mitchell so far, who, by the way, has like a 25% true shooting after a couple of games. But I think, by the way, I think Mitchell is going to be a good player, but it's more likely he becomes like more of a 3-and-D guy, which is still be very valuable, than that he's going to be like this superstar offensive player. Maybe he could get there, but I think people who are like, oh, he's going to be the rookie of the year, maybe getting a little ahead of themselves here due to some of his offensive limitations at this point. But let's also talk about Tobias Harris, who just offensively seems to make incremental improvements every year, especially with his jump shot. You know, now he really shoots it with no hesitation out there. If you remember early in his career, when he first got to Orlando, that was something he didn't really feel comfortable doing. And in that 31-point game that he had against the Knicks, he really had it working from outside. He also looks more athletic. He had like multiple tip dunks. You know, he used to be kind of a doughy guy, and to see him get that many dunks was pretty solid. Already on the season, he has, I think, like 5 or 6 dunks, actually. I was going to look it up, but Basketball Reference doesn't actually have the shooting stuff up yet this year. So that's looked really good. I think just the opportunistic scoring for him. I also just like that Stanley Johnson has been playing a ton of minutes. I know he had just that awful 0-for-12 game and he kind of got beat up by Porzingis a little bit early. But I just, the element that he brings in terms of his versatility, I like the fact that they're just giving him a chance now with the departure of Marcus Morris. He's going to be playing plenty of minutes this year. They actually closed out that game against the Knicks with John Luer at center, Stanley or Harris, whoever you want to say it, at the four, and then obviously Jackson and Avery Bradley. You probably watch more Pistons than I have. How has Reggie Jackson looked so far?
Definitely better than last year. I'm trying to remember. I think it was in the Wizards game where you could just see his movement was a little bit less labored. He still is the same player. Like, you don't really see that difference. But you know, I mean, that was one of the big questions I had for them this year was last year really a worst case scenario? Was that kind of who they were? And at least with Reggie, I don't have a feel yet for Drummond, but Reggie seems like he's closer to 15-16 than 16-17, at least so far.
Yeah, Reggie does have a 23 PER, not shooting it extremely efficiently, but if he can even get back to halfway between what he was 2 years ago, I think, and what he was last year, I think the Pistons should make the playoffs pretty comfortably, especially with the Sixers off to kind of a rough start. Real quickly, if you had to pick anyone among the East teams that we kind of consensus pick to not make the playoffs that you think is most likely to make it now, even after this short period, who would you say?
Wow, that's actually a really tough call.
Well, so here are some candidates. The Magic are 2-1. The Pacers are 1-2, but have looked okay, and Miles Turner has missed two of those games. The Nets are 2-1. But obviously they lost Lynn. Those are probably the ones you would have to look at, maybe.
I'd probably go with Orlando just because I think their fundamentals are better. You know, we have this idea that they could be better defensively, and their offense, we'll get to them in a little bit. Their offense has been fueled in some surprising and interesting ways that could continue at least a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, they had a massive win at Cleveland on Saturday night without Aaron Gordon or Elfrid Payton. But yeah, you know, not sure how much of that is them. Let's get to Indiana now. 1-2, did beat the Nets on opening night in a game that was the fastest pace that we've seen in the NBA in like 10 years. And some of their power forwards have actually looked okay at times.
They have. I would extend that actually to their young bigs in general, because Miles Turner had a very good game against the Nets and then is dealing with a concussion right now. But yeah, I mean, so TJ Leaf in the Portland game, so the next game, had 17 points in 19 minutes, which is very impressive. Offensively, he seems like a gifted guy. I was wondering about his jump shot, like, you know, more for extending it all the way out to three. And Demo, wait, not Demo. Well, I guess that could be his nickname too, but Sabonis had a nice game. In...
No, it can't be his nickname. Demo is because it's D and then M-O, Matiunas.
I know. I tried to save it, Nate. I tried to save it. But Sabonis, yeah, he's looked...
Just admit when you screw up, man. Yeah. I know it's hard for you.
It is hard for me. But I thought Sabonis, he's looked more like a rotation guy than I expected. I mean, that's still not the centerpiece of the Paul George trade, but if he can provide at least that value, it would be very useful for them.
Yeah, he had a game where he was 7 of 7. I think he started in Turner's absence against the Blazers, although they ended up losing that one. And Leaf, you mentioned him. He's played, I mean, just... I think even the fact that he's been in the rotation and has been okay, I think we expected him to be out of the rotation. Part of that's because Turner has been out, but in 46 minutes, he's got 22 points. That's totally good for a rookie, shooting 60% from the field, 50% from three. That's on a very small sample, of course, but I mean, for him to just at least look comfortable offensively is pretty good. Let's get to Miami 1-1, a little bit snake bit. Right now, Hassan Whiteside injured his knee after having a monster 25 and 22 game. Deion Waiters has been talking about his ankle being sore. They've been getting a lot of minutes for Josh Richardson. He's played well, but what have you seen from them? I haven't seen as much of them maybe as you have.
Though this was mostly, you know, when Hassan Whiteside, you know, with him playing, they have been dominant in the restricted area. And I kind of look at two different elements of that. One is frequency, just what proportion of their shots are coming at the rim. They're third in the league. 35.2% of their attempts are in the restricted area. That's phenomenal. And they're making a lot of them. They're sixth in field goal percentage, 68.1%. And so that you can do in a couple different ways. You can do it by feeding a guy in the post. You can do it by running in transition for dunks and by getting penetration. And at their best, Miami can do all three of those reasonably well.
I also like that they've gone with James Johnson in the starting lineup rather than Olynyk. They started that way. I don't think that's their best lineup. I think that Johnson gives them more of an element, especially in transition and defensively. Now, probably Olynyk will start at center as long as Whiteside is out. Doesn't sound like too long of a thing for him, but I think Olynyk maybe is a little bit better purely as a backup center, and then maybe he can play at the end of games sometimes if Whiteside is just, you know, too slow to get out on the perimeter a little bit, although Olynyk not necessarily a panacea there either. But James Johnson has played well so far, and he's actually blocked 8% of opponent twos so far, which is pretty remarkable for him. So at least in the very early going, it doesn't look like, I mean, a lot of times you'll see a guy who's about to be a free agent, and especially if he's going to be 30, kind of take it easy for 3 months of the offseason until he gets signed. It doesn't look like Johnson did that. He looks pretty close to where he was last year, at least subjectively early on. How about the Giannis Antetokounmpo's?
Oh, man. I mean, I feel like the positive there could just... I mean, they've had plenty of other ones, but you could just say the last 30 seconds of their game against the Blazers was just incredible. Giannis stole... Actually, before the last 30 seconds, he stole the ball, leading to the possession. He missed two free throws. Then he stole it from CJ McCollum and got a dunk. Then he blocked Jusuf Nurkić at the rim and basically iced the game. It was just an amazing performance from him in a game where he set his career high with 44 points. And I, as you know, have been a firm believer in Giannis as a power forward, that I think that's the best position for him offensively and defensively. I mean, you're always going to put your best forward defender on him, so it's more a defensive distinction. But I love him as a help defender, and I think he's been better in those sorts of ways this year so far than he was overall last year.
And it was interesting to see him guarding LeBron as well in that Cleveland game. I thought he provided the best option on him. And he's usually going to be a pretty damn good isolation defender. Tougher for him to get over screens, but especially if you're involving him in a pick and roll as the big defender, he can just switch out on whoever that is. Give you some stats from him. I mean, he's got to be the early favorite for MVP after, you know, three games. 35% usage. I mean, this is one of the big things too, is that he's rarely taking jumpers, and yet he's still just creating so many shots. Not against a murderer's row of defenses so far on the interior, to be sure, but 71% true shooting, getting to the foul line for 11 free throw attempts a game, and he is 34 of 40 in the restricted area. And actually, although he's not shooting that many jumpers, he's just one of six from three, he is 47% on non-restricted area twos. And again, not that many of those are jumpers, but he's able to kind of shoot 1 foot floaters from like 4 or 5 feet off the glass. And I think just because he's so big, he can almost make that kind of shot closer to a layup. So his touch around the rim, I think, is really coming along quite well. And they've been really difficult to stop too with Thon Maker at center, because when Thon spaces out, now your big center has got to guard him. And then Giannis, I mean, he's not really just like blowing by guys, but he kind of just works into position, and he's gotten so strong that he can either just up and under guys and step around them, or just, you'll see guys like Evan Turner, the way he was guarding him was like, oh, he can't shoot, I'm just going to back up into the lane. But then you're letting him just accelerate and get ahead of steam and then just go right through you or over you for a layup. So I think actually the way you got to try and defend him is still try to get up into him, make him uncomfortable with his dribble, you know, don't let him just get started and keep backing up, because before you realize it, you're just right under the basket and he's just going to score.
Also, purely physiologically, his dunk on Aaron Baines might be the most impressive dunk I've seen this year, because he got, like, first of all, I'm not even sure Aaron Baines knew what was going on, but he fouled Giannis and Giannis still got the ball in the basket.
Oh yeah, that was fantastic. I mean, and again, you know, they've played Portland and Cleveland and the Celtics. None of those teams really have much in the way of players protecting the basket. So we'll see if he goes up against more size. But, you know, who in the Eastern Conference has any kind of size really at this point that you're going to be worried about? You know, even a team like the Wizards or the Raptors, who could be their competition, you would think, in the playoffs, you know, Valanciunas, Gortat, like those guys aren't scaring you too much at the rim either.
Let's move on to the New York Knicks. They're 0-2 with losses to OKC and Detroit, but Kristaps Porzingis has dropped more than 30 points in both those games, 31 in the first, 33 in the second, and he's been reasonably efficient, 61.5 true shooting percentage, which is impressive.
Yeah, he has, and the biggest thing for me about him is I always question, can he get enough shots up, right? And we knew that question would get answered this year because they don't have anyone else who can create, and it's been a big problem for them, obviously. So the fact that he's been able to have a 30% usage, be efficient so far, even without any other threats around him, has been impressive. He also never turns it over, which is nice as well. That's something that Dirk Nowitzki has in common with him, that Dirk, part of what was so underrated about him was the fact that he just never turned it over. Now, the biggest thing that he's been getting a lot of his points, he's been getting switches, and he's been able to get into the post against, you know, for example, like he put Stanley Johnson in foul trouble by just like shooting right over him. He had more trouble in the past with guys who could kind of get underneath him, and now I think he's getting comfortable enough where he's not necessarily overpowering those guys, but he's able to just turn, especially to his right shoulder, right over those guys, and they just can't really bother his shot. And so if he can't knock them back, at least he's not getting knocked back either. He is shooting 55% right now from mid-range, and that's going to come down, to be sure. I mean, that's where a lot of his efficiency is built, but he's also not shooting it great at the rim, so maybe that'll end up canceling out. I mean, and really for him, because you remember even last year when they had Carmelo and Derrick Rose, he really wasn't much above the league average in terms of his efficiency. And so if he can just maintain this sort of a usage jump and be kind of average efficiency, I mean, he's not going to maintain this level, I don't think. That would be very much a step forward in terms of his shot creation, because I thought that was something he might struggle with. He's been okay so far, more than okay.
Absolutely. Well, let's hand it over to Liam for the 2-1 Orlando Magic.
All right, so Magic so far, they had a close win over the Heat, and they demolished the Cavs over the weekend, and with a close loss to the Nets, too. So Nikola Vucevic has got to be the story of the team so far. He's 76, he's been huge from three, with 7 of 14 from three-point range, with majority of those, 13 of them coming above the break, which is huge for transition defense, and it's just a little more distance that the big has to cover, you know, trying to guard that. So, you know, 50% he's not going to be able to keep up, but if he can be a threat from there, it's huge for their offensive spacing. Otherwise, they've had some good contributions from Bobby Simmons. He's been huge with
you want to try Jonathan Simmons there, my man.
I thought I had screwed it up. I remember
Bobby. I do Nets, like the shout out to Bobby Simmons
from the
though.
Nets back in the day.
I like the shout out to Bobby Simmons because he was actually in my graduating class in Chicago, like Corey Maggette, Quentin Richardson were all in that class too. So shout out to
Well, so now Nate's getting into Chicago players that have never even been in the league during the time that Dunked On has been on the air. I'm very impressed.
Bobby actually follows me on Twitter. He's back active. He was a Simeon High School graduate and has been active, I think, back in the Chicago basketball community. But yeah, so Jonathan Simmons, I think, is who you're going for there. But hey, you know, this is for a young guy like Liam to show the at least unintentional breadth of his basketball knowledge is good.
Right. Well, I don't know about that, but Simmons has been really good from three so far, 5 of 9, you know, small sample size, but he's looked really comfortable doing it. A couple off the dribble, and they've been using him as a primary ball handler with the second unit over Shelvin Mack, which I thought was surprising. And they used him at the end of the quarter when they wanted to create a possession. He's just been really, explosive off the dribble, you know, in pick and roll. He showed some, you know, savvy with his handle, more than I thought I saw with the Spurs. So I was impressed with that. He's had some nice passes too, but I haven't always been finished by the big man. And Jonathan Isaac has been a big part of their, he's the big bright spot for the team as far as, you know, youth talent that they're looking to develop. And I think he showed some, you know, some defensive ability, some good weak side help, a couple of nice shot blocks. He's just got a special combination of speed and length, you know, on closeouts. He had a couple where, you know, he really bothered Kelly Olynyk and Justice Winslow. So he does a little bit of everything, you know, showed a couple passes, you know, really good on the boards. Not going to be a big scorer this year, 13% usage rate, but some things to look forward to there with his development.
Yeah, thanks for those notes, Levin. I think that the one thing I wanted to react to in particular was what you said about Vucevic, because for him, shooting the three-pointer is obviously huge, right? He's never been that big of, or someone we've been that big of a fan of on the show, because he shoots a lot of long twos, never ever gets to the foul line, wasn't shooting threes. So he created shots, but he wasn't that efficient. But he also, even by his standards, was horrendous last year, just couldn't hit a shot even for what he normally does. And so if he actually can be pushing the ball out to three-point range now, and just even him getting back to the level he'd been at before would have been significant for these guys, but if he could even be above there in terms of efficiency, that'd be great. Now, he still got killed on defense, of course, in that Brooklyn game, but that having him space the floor as well for some of these young guys like Peyton and Gordon, I think, would really help. Now, you never know, too, like every year somebody comes back and they're shooting a bunch of threes early and you're like, oh man, you know, like he's shooting threes now, and he hits a few early. You never know if it's going to persist necessarily in terms of actually making them, but that would be a significant development for him. What else you got here, Liam?
So Danny mentioned that they're up in pace, up to 106 in possessions. From last year, they were 98, and you can tell when you're watching them. They played against some, you know, high pace. Well, they played against Brooklyn. Brooklyn runs against everybody, so you kind of have to play that way. But they really made a concerted effort to run, and they've got good personnel for it. Like Fournier gets out there, Ross, Gordon when he's healthy, Elfrid Payton. So Vucevic not so much, but they've got some athletes that like to get up and down when you throw Simmons in there too. And just on both lineups, they have, you know, a lot of space, and they've been playing Hezonja at the four, where he hasn't exactly played great, but at least teams will respect him at the 3-point line. So you get a little more spacing with those pick and rolls with Biombo down the middle. So they've got, you know, there's a lot to work with offensively. There's a lot of reasons to be positive. Obviously, they're not going to keep up this shooting that they've had so far, but, you know, some stuff to build off of, whereas, you know, last year was a real struggle.
Yeah, a couple of notes that you had. Them shooting 29% from three by opponents, that's something that's not going to continue, although they did play the Cavs.
I was trying to keep it positive.
And the Cavs now can't make a three all of a sudden. Yeah. Well, I think that's what we're going to have to do, is just like find a way to like shit on these teams in the bad way when it's not their section. But and then you also mentioned, which I think is maybe more indicative, is they're only allowing 25% of opponent shots from three, which is good. And, you know, although Cleveland's not taking as many threes this year, Brooklyn likes to get them up, and so did Miami last year. So that's actually, I think, a good thing for them. All right, why don't we move on to the 76ers, who are at 0-3. But first, this from Wink. When you have a great moment, such as when Liam said Bobby Simmons instead of Jonathan Simmons, and I got to flash back to my youth as a extremely mediocre Chicago high school player in the class of 1998, and I wasn't even in Chicago. I was in the first suburb west of the city. But nonetheless, so it's still a great moment for me. A great glass of wine only enhances that moment. Wink understands this and offers exceptional wines from around the world to give you more of those moments. The way to get started with them is TryWink, TryWinc.com. You can take their palate profile quiz. I took it, and it really helped them to send me wines that I enjoyed. I had never been a huge wine drinker. I still wouldn't say I'm a huge wine drinker, but I'm enjoying it more now with Wink because they base the wines they send on my taste preferences. This palate profile is not something I'd really been exposed to before. They asked a bunch of questions, whether I like citrus, which I really do, whether I like earthy flavors, not as much, red or white wines, kind of liked white a little more in the summer, red a little bit more now, and a few other questions as well. And so they're able to give me some wines that I really enjoy. They can even introduce you to rare, new, and custom wines that are not available anywhere else. And they tell you the story behind each one. They have a lot of vertical integration, so they have access to wines that no one else does. So here's how it works. You can join for free. You can skip any month. They'll tell you which wines they are sending in advance. And you can cancel anytime. They have 100% satisfaction guarantee, so you never pay for a bottle that you don't like. That's really a fantastic deal. If they send you something, you try it, and you don't like it, they'll send you something else. And of course, it would not be a Dunked On ad if you didn't get a special deal. Wink is offering listeners $20 off your first order when you go to trywink.com/capspace. TryWinc.com/capspace. They'll even cover the cost of shipping. That's TryWinc, TryWinc.com/capspace. They'll get you $20 off your first order and complimentary shipping. TryWinc.com/capspace. All right, Danny, what we got here for the Sixers?
They are 0-3, though we should note that all three of those losses were to teams that we expect to make the playoffs. So, and the loss to the Wizards was clearly, to me, the best of those three. They were in it until the very end. And the most impressive part of it to me has been Ben Simmons overall, but especially he has surprised me more on defense, because at LSU, there were these big questions about whether, because he basically just didn't care. And so it was, how is it going to transfer and everything else? And he has been more assertive than I had expected. And he has also shown better instincts because he's just a smart basketball player. It's not surprising. You see some of the same stuff from Lonzo periodically. And I like that you can see they don't need him to be gangbusters there. They have Robert Covington for that. They have Joel Embiid for that. But if he can competently defend in his circumstances and make some of those, you know, instinct steals and defensive rebounds, they'll be fine.
I've liked what I've seen from him offensively as well. Hasn't been incredibly efficient so far, only 46% true shooting. But what I've liked is the 25% usage. There was a concern that, oh, maybe he's going to be just like a 6'10 Rondo. And I think he's been aggressive enough that he's been quite beyond that. He is taking pretty much every single one of his shots within 10 feet of the basket. Actually did hit a couple of lefty, like pure jump shots around the foul line in that game where they got blown out against the Raptors on Saturday night. Has not been shooting a great percentage on floaters. That, I think, will come up, only 21%. And the defense definitely can kind of back off and make him shoot not that great of a percentage at the rim. He's 57% there. But when you consider he's a perimeter player, essentially, who has no jump shot at all, getting to that type of usage is pretty impressive. And I think he's looked good getting the ball in the post, looked good finding ways to create. And, of course, in transition, he's been outstanding. And then I guess the only other good thing is you can say at least that loss against the Raptors was without Joel Embiid. And they've defended well with Joel on the floor to date.
They have. And Jahlil played a little bit in that game, and I thought he was fine. So that was always, it's nice to see that. And while this isn't really a positive or a negative, at some point we'll talk about rookie option decisions, and that is one of the most compelling ones, if not the most compelling one in the entire league.
Yeah, actually, maybe we should do that for tomorrow's episode.
Okay.
Toronto Raptors, 2-0, two massive blowout wins. They have the best net rating in the NBA right now. DeMar DeRozan had a ridiculous game with 30 points on 12 shots against the Sixers. But the biggest thing that you pointed out here is that OG Anunoby looks great.
He does. And the biggest reason he fell in the draft was not his ability. It was not his athleticism. It was not his fit in the NBA. It was apparently that people were worried about his injuries. And guess what? He's playing at the beginning of his rookie season and he's looking good. I think that he has a nice head on his shoulders, and wings of his size are incredibly valuable in the league. The other big positive I wanted to mention for the Raptors, and this is not a surprise, but they are getting to the line at an astonishing rate. They've only played two games, but their free throw attempt rate is 36%, which is just dwarfing the rest of the league. They have a lot of guys who are good at that, and it can't stay that high, but they can still be up towards the front of the league, and that gives them an offensive foundation, at least in the regular season, even if they don't make all the threes that they've been attempting so far, which has also been encouraging.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. We'll see. Like, Kyle Lowry hasn't had to do that much yet this season. We'll see whether he's started to regress or not, but too early to say there. at his age. Back to Anunoby, I wonder if like they had just been totally transparent about what his injury was from the beginning, that things he might not have fallen as far, because there's always this mystery around exactly what his knee injury was. And maybe they, you know, teams were told that directly, but even I think having that stuff publicly, it was just like, okay, it's just an ACL, you know, timeline is he'll be back by the start of next season. You know, you never heard that kind of stuff, right? It was just, he suffered a serious knee injury. That's all that was ever said. And even, yeah, you can tell teams that, but public information is important because you never really know what could be affecting the anchoring of team decision makers, right? Like even if it's just, okay, you know, the major draft sites know what this is and that he'll be back, that might change where he's going to go in a mock draft, right? And so I think it was always kind of ridiculous that he fell to 24 if there was, and presumably by the time of the draft, they would have known that he was on track to come back at the start of the season. And like that just wasn't out there at all. And maybe they didn't want to put pressure on him or whatever, but whatever this injury was, people were like, oh man, this must be really bad. They're not even saying what it is. I think it's better to just be transparent in those circumstances.
Let's move on to the Washington Wizards. They are also undefeated at 2-0, and you could go in a couple directions. And I know there's one that you want to talk about, but my favorite thing that has happened with them so far was at the end of the game against the Pistons. John Wall had an absolutely amazing block. I believe it was on Reggie Jackson that really did key and solidify their victory.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I mean, Wall has had a bunch of blocks already. He's got four so far on the season. And that was not my favorite moment, though, because when he completely destroyed TLC on the dunk would be my favorite. But during the Twitter NBA show, that was definitely one of probably our top five Twitter NBA show reactions so far in the history of the show when he did that. But I think also we can talk about Otto Porter. He is just continuing to find more ways to score. And it's not even necessarily, I don't know that that's going to continue necessarily, but he has a 24.6 PER. He's got his usage up a little bit under 20%. But it's still really the same opportunistic stuff that it's always been. Transition, spot ups, cuts. That's over 60% of his offense, stuff that's basically directly set up by others. But he's still going to be really efficient. And as long as he's doing that and can get his usage up around 20%, that'll really provide some needed scoring for this team. They also have been starting now these last couple of games Kelly Oubre. I think they've looked much better there, especially defensively. I think he will help them have some additional versatility. They started Jason Smith, and Smith now has a shoulder injury. He only played the first 7 minutes of their opener. We talked about how he struggled a little bit guarding Robert Covington, and I don't know if he never came back in due to that shoulder injury or whether just because he wasn't effective, but I do think that playing Oubre to start is better. It's just a question of whether they can get enough off the bench. They even had Mike Scott in the game as a defensive replacement to try and switch at the end of that Detroit game. Don't know if that's something you necessarily want to rely on all the time, but it seems like they're getting enough from their bench to not just get totally worked, and they've won these two games. Although, you know, kind of, I mean, if you had to say, hey, what are expectations for this team? They're maybe a little bit below that, just with two extremely close wins against Philly and Detroit, who are teams at home who are supposed to be kind of below them in the Eastern Conference hierarchy.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair, but it looks like a line drive in the box score when you win it, as long as they can react to it.
So before we get to the West, I want to ask you the same question. Of the teams that you projected to be out of the playoffs, which do you feel had the best chance of breaking into that in the West right now?
Well, it was a real challenge at the bottom of the West for me, you know, figuring out who got that last spot. And assuming memory serves, and I think it does, I had Portland out. Portland is certainly good enough to make it in. They're 2-1 right now. And Memphis has looked good. I don't know how much of that I think is going to carry out. But yeah, I could absolutely see both of them or New Orleans just going in. It was just a matter of kind of balancing out the bottom half of it, or just who is better than who, as opposed to the East, where it's basically who survives.
Yeah, I had Portland and Memphis as 7-8, and then the Clippers and Utah as 9-10, but all of them between 43 and 41 wins. I think I would probably stick with that same thing. I think, but you know, the Clippers obviously looked awesome, but they played probably the two worst teams in the West, and you know, maybe Sacramento can get in there too, but and also the Teodosic injury as well now has happened. I mean, that was one of the big reasons I was down on them. It's nice that they had two nice blowout victories to begin with. We'll see what happens when they play a real team. But also, we expected them to be solid at full strength. Blake looks better maybe than it could have been expected. But again, there's two teams that have absolutely no one to guard him. So And Portland and Memphis both look awesome. So I think I probably would stick with what I had so far. Maybe what I would say even is that Denver might be back in that scrum with them instead of, you know, I had them at 47 wins. So we'll see. I mean, it's obviously two games, three games for all these teams. It's completely early jumping to conclusions. But yeah, and then Utah, I think the reason that they've played really well too, it's just this latest Rodney Hood injury again. You know, how many of these injuries can they sustain? They seem to be hurt all the time too.
Great. So now we get to start with the positive on the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks are 0-3, including a loss to Sacramento, which is, you know, we could talk about that. But the bright spot in the game he played is certainly Dennis Smith. He looked good, and there's a reason why you and I were super excited about him, and all of that is still true when he could be on the floor.
Yeah, he started the season actually with a back screen for an alley-oop dunk, had another nice dunk where he just was under the rim flat-footed, went up and dunked it. But then he came down in kind of ugly fashion. He's missed the last two games with knee effusion, i.e. swelling, to us lay people. May return on Monday. It's not sure yet, so it doesn't sound too serious. But just to have that kind of a debut is certainly solid. And I think the Hawks' defense actually isn't that bad, at least with some of their main units. Their bench is a little uglier. I think where you can take some hope is that the players who have underperformed so far are really their three biggest vets, Matthews, Barnes, and Dirk, all shooting just really poorly right now. And so you can take heart from that those guys are probably going to get better and that they'll do a little better. They're also playing extremely slowly. Again, I mean, that Sacramento game was one of the slower games. And I think especially with Smith out, these guys not shooting that well, you're going to have to slow it down and kind of play a little bit more bully ball, iso ball, more than Carlisle might like to. Nerlens, I think, has been solid, at least from a statistical standpoint. 26 PR, over 80% true shooting. Not a high usage necessarily yet, but at least has been finishing around the rim. It was interesting, actually, that he was playing well, and then Dirk didn't close that game, but neither did Nerlens. I actually closed it with Dwight Powell because he had hit a couple of threes, and Carlisle was like, oh, well, you know, Dwight Powell seemed like he really had it going, which was a little weird, but that was their first game against the Hawks on Wednesday. So I think they'll be better if they can get healthy, and remember, they're still missing Seth Curry as well, who's another key piece of their offense. So I think there's, you know, it's been a rough start for them. 36 wins might not happen. That was my prediction for them, but it'll get better for them than it has been so far, just as people get healthy.
One other thing I want to mention, just because when I was putting together League Pass games of the week, I noticed this. They have a home and home back to back with the Grizzlies. And while I don't love those broadly throughout the league, I do kind of like them with division teams because four games against an opponent is kind of a lot. And so that way, at least if the teams are going through a back to back, they have exactly the same travel.
Yeah, it is tough though. I mean, it's a little different in baseball because in basketball, like, one player means so much, where if you play two games against a team so soon, it can just skew the sample a little bit. So, and I know you've railed against that before.
That is completely true. I forgot why I used to hate that, and that's exactly why. I retract my support.
Denver Nuggets are 1-1. The good news here, their defense looks a lot better.
It does, and sample size is almost definitely a part of this, but the big question kind of with Paul Millsap was, can they improve their defense while keeping their offense afloat? They went from 30th last year in opponent effective field goal percentage. Right now, they're 5th. Even if they don't stay 5th, if they can be anywhere near the top half, that is a huge improvement for them and will make life so much easier in every other capacity.
Yeah. Now, worth noting that the two teams that they've played so far, Utah and Sacramento, Utah and Sacramento is who they've played, are probably going to finish pretty low in terms of defense, but they couldn't even stop bad, or pretty low in terms of offense. They couldn't even stop bad offensive teams last year. So you have to imagine that Millsap is helping a little bit. You can also say it's nice that they're 1-1 when Nikola Jokic has a 4.2 PER and is shooting like 26% from the field, and Jamal Murray has a negative 0.4 PER. And they've also been getting a lot of production from Will Barton so far, to the point where they actually have been going with Will Barton and Gary Harris together in a lot of lineups, both those guys shooting the three ball pretty well.
The flexibility that you get by having Jokic, who can have the ball in his hands and do positive things, is that you can go with some of those lineups as long as you can get the defensive matchups right. And then the other small piece is that Utah, Denver, and the Spurs are the only three teams that are above league average in all four defensive four factors, which I just think is cool.
Yeah, they also actually, they never forced any turnovers last year, and they're doing a little bit better in that regard, I think Millsap is helping there. We'll see again. I mean, those are, when you go up against offensively challenged teams, they're going to have to force plays and they're going to turn it over more. But hey, I mean, this is probably, how many two game samples did they have last year that were even like this good? So, so the Golden State Warriors are 1-2. I'd say that the silver lining there is that they still have Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, and Steph Curry.
I was going to say that it's an 82-game season. They'll be fine. And, I mean, as long as Steph Curry doesn't have two out of every three games where he gets in serious foul trouble, I think they'll be fine. And they, you know, the talent is still here. And one guy that has stood out in a positive way beyond all their good players, their, like, well-known players, is I've been impressed in limited time with Jordan Bell.
Yeah, Jordan Bell might already be the best center on this team. Might. You know, he doesn't know the system that well. You can't necessarily throw it into the post. I mean, he's not as good of a screener as guys like Zaza. You know, David West might still be the best center on this team, but especially, and Kerr's never going to just not play guys. He's going to play 8 billion centers. Jordan Bell is not going to get that many minutes. He's not going to start by the end of the year or anything like that. Maybe if they like start to struggle in a playoff series, you'd play more. But just defensively, I've been extremely impressed. I know he had those struggles early on in his first stint against Houston, but just he comes out of nowhere for blocks. He's smart. He can finish around the rim. He's got pretty good switchability against all but the best players. I really liked what we've seen from him. He'll try and work on the offensive glass a little bit as well, but a little more on them. Danny, you watched their last two games. I only saw the opener. Can you say why their defense has struggled so much? I mean, I know we're supposed to be saying good things here, but we say enough good things about the Warriors. I think their fans are not going to be mad at us for not being positive enough. So can you explain just like what you've seen from their defense and what the issue has been?
Effort and execution are the two biggest parts of it. I mean, they've just been slow on their rotations, and the Warriors are usually so good about attacking those sorts of things. And they've also, so there have been more messes to clean up, and they haven't been as good at doing it. So I think those are both important parts of the whole. And, you know, they've also been dealing with, you know, like Steph's foul trouble. And I'm interested to see really where Kerr goes with the second units, because I think they're kind of getting into a trap that they avoided last year by switching it, which was all these guys that can't shoot together. I mean, they have right now, they have Draymond out of that lineup, which is also interesting, but it's basically Livingston, a shooting guard to be named later, Durant, Iguodala, and then usually David West. And so, you know, there's not a lot of three-point shooting in those lineups, depending on who they use as the fifth guy. And that group can defend, but that's the only way that they can be really reliably successful.
Houston is 3-0. Chris Paul could miss as much as 2 to 4 weeks with that knee issue that he aggravated in the opener against Golden State, has not played since then. I think the biggest thing for me, though, is just like how they look physically, other than Paul, with James Harden in particular being in great shape. We talked about that a lot in the opener, so we don't necessarily have to rehash that. I think the other thing, though, is just like what PJ Tucker has been able to do for this team so far.
I've really enjoyed PJ Tucker, and where I was going to go with that along the lines of PJ Tucker is that the moves they made in the offseason, beyond even Chris Paul, this team makes sense. You know, the players, I can see the theory of this team, the fact that they're about nine deep, and all those nine are players that D'Antoni should trust in the playoffs, is exceedingly important. And, you know, PJ Tucker, he has not, you know, his other games haven't been the offensive explosion as we expected. You know, the 20 points against Golden State was an aberration, but, you know, two of three from three against against Sacramento, playing good defense, you're good with that.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's really critical just that he gets up enough shots, and same thing with Mba Mute. Harden, 37% usage, by the way, and I assume his usage will be as high as ever with Chris Paul out. We've noted that Eric Gordon has looked solid in the early going, although neither he nor Ariza has really gotten it going from three yet. Tucker is shooting well, and so is Harden, but really everyone else on this team not hitting. Ryan Anderson, 32%, Gordon and Ariza both at 20%. So I think they have another level to get to even offensively, even without Chris Paul in the lineup. But like you said, I agree that this team makes more sense, especially if you're just going to try to find a way to stop the best teams in the league. And well, I won't say that they're more important than Chris Paul, certainly during the regular season once he returns. And Mba Mute and Tucker might end up being as important as him in the playoffs when you consider some of the players that might be replaced in their closing lineup. Let's move on here. Who's next?
The Clippers had two absolutely dominant wins. We talked a little bit about them a few minutes ago, and their defense has looked great. That might tone down when they play teams other than the Lakers and the Suns, but we're staying positive. And I mean, Patrick Beverley, I think where you start with this was just the way he hounded Lonzo Ball was, I'm not somebody who roots against anyone, especially not Lonzo, but you like seeing somebody get that welcome to the NBA moment, because there is not a player like Patrick Beverley in college basketball or in the LA high school basketball and AAU scene.
Well, especially it's funny in the NBA. I actually would push back on that a little bit. I think like summer league, college, you see more guys, I mean, they're not quite as good at it as Beverley, but who really try to like get up into you and pressure the ball a lot. More coaches have those kinds of systems. Guys just on a game-to-game effort, I don't want to say that they play harder, but it's just, it's not possible to play big minutes in an NBA game and put on that type of pressure for most people, you know, the way you can in a college game when there's a slower pace and the shot clock and a billion stoppages. So, and in summer league when guys are just like fighting for their lives and not playing that many minutes. But I do really enjoy that. Like, and what I've also enjoyed about this Clippers team is just what Blake Griffin has been doing. Again, he's only played two games, but he had 29 points in three quarters against the Lakers the other night. He really just, I noted in the opener, like, oh man, that was against the Suns, the 29 points in three quarters. In the opener, he like went for a layup, and then we noted how he just dunked all over Julius Randle. I think the biggest thing, even more so than that, and that will make up for the fact potentially that he's not the athlete that he used to be, is the way he's hitting the three-pointer
and the way he's taking him too. Taking him is it's not as important as making them, but it is incredibly important as well.
Yeah, he's taking them like in pick and pops. It's not just like a pure spot up type of situation. And I think as a pure spot up, it would have been more useful last year when he was playing more around, and in previous years, he's playing more on Chris Paul pick and rolls with DeAndre Jordan. Now, though, he's usually going to be more involved in the primary action, but it's tough for him to roll to the basket because DJ is still down there. If he can pop now, and he's shooting a little bit more on the way up, he's never going to be totally gone, totally rid of that hitch. It's funny, actually, we were talking on our G-Chat thread. One of the first things that I ever wrote about the NBA a little more than 5 years ago was that Blake Griffin, people are always like, oh, Blake Griffin, whenever he develops a jumper. And so I looked at it and I basically concluded that any big who shoots so poorly from the free throw line is never going to develop a good jumper, right? Like if you don't improve your free throw shooting, you don't also improve your jump shooting. Like there are guys like Karl Malone and Chris Webber who were terrible free throw shooters their first year, but then got better and became decent jump shooters for bigs. Maybe those are guys who would have taken more three-pointers in this day and age. And so Blake, you remember when he came out of school was, you know, pretty close to one of these like Hacka guys. You know, he was shooting in the low 50s, and then he got up into the 60s the year after that, and he's basically been over 70% every season since then. So really, while Blake is this guy who like always seems like a crybaby and people don't like the Clippers and blah blah blah, he deserves a ton of credit as a guy who had really no natural shooting talent for where he's been able to get his jump shot to be.
I really feel like that's a natural transition to the Lakers and Lonzo Ball. I mean, Lonzo is a very different jump shot. His is just mechanically horrifying. It's a much better shot than Blake's was early in his career. But where I want to go with Lonzo Ball is that the court vision and passing is for real. It just is. And he had the look aheads that he has, the outlet passes that are in his arsenal already are exceedingly rare and will lead to positive things, especially as the Lakers can get players and put in lineups around him that make sense with what he does well.
Yeah, he had a nice bounce back game, triple-double, 29 points against the Phoenix Suns as they put up a buck 32 on a defense, shall we say.
It was one assist short of a triple double, so it was a terrible game.
All right, yeah, I'm sorry. No, it's only a terrible game if you're one rebound short of a triple double in your guard. But he had a lot of encouraging things. I think he shot 4 out of 9 on three pointers in that game, hit a couple of shots coming off screens. Still wasn't that efficient shooting the ball, but he got up a lot of shots. There was this idea that he couldn't be a scorer. He doesn't look great, but he's looked more comfortable in mid-range than he had before. He had one play where he even like went right through Tyson Chandler, who has looked like quite the husk so far this season. But still, you're going through a 7-footer for a layup. That's impressive. But he had maybe my favorite play of the season so far that wasn't just like an awesome dunk. So a lot of times now, they were just killing Phoenix in pick and roll. It was some of the worst pick and roll defense I've ever seen. Brook Lopez was really causing problems with his shooting. And so that's how Lonzo was getting all these buckets. So he was just getting like right to the middle of the lane. The big was sticking at Brook Lopez at the 3-point line. And then there was just nobody helping, even though they had like Corey Brewer on the floor. And so they come out of a timeout. Earl Watson switches up the pick and roll defense and they switch. And so they put Chandler on Lonzo out top, and pretty much any guard in the league would be like, oh shit, I got a center on me. I'm going to take this dude. I'm going to dance around, dribble for the next 15 seconds and, you know, try and beat the guy and either beat him or not. Lonzo realized that what they did on the backside was, because Lopez was rolling to the rim, they had whoever was guarding Brandon Ingram, but a bigger guy than whoever the point guard was, switch onto Lopez who's rolling to get some more size on him on that switch matchup. You'll see teams do that all the time. The Warriors were the ones who kind of pioneered that. And so Lonzo, he's at the top of the key. Brandon Ingram's in the left corner. Lonzo sees them doing that switch behind the play and then just dimes up Brandon Ingram immediately for a wide open corner three. Like, it was, I've never seen anybody take advantage of that switch on that play before the way he did. It's just a play that you don't see that type of recognition from. I mean, he didn't see that kind of defense in college, you know, just to instinctively say, hey, they're switching behind the play, and not just be so focused on like, oh, I got Tyson Chandler on me. It was really remarkable. Of course, Ingram missed the three. He did have a nice game in that game, but that one play, I hope I described it well, but it was just, that's an example of the type of stuff that he can do. Whether he all the other stuff is going to come around well enough to make him really like a superstar player or a star, it's too early to say yet, but that's the type of talent that you were talking about when we first mentioned the Lakers today.
Also mentioned that I enjoyed some good minutes from Josh Hart today. They had to experiment with some good lineups. They came back on the Pelicans, ended up losing, but I like that they've tried some stuff out. We'll see where they go with Kyle Kuzma, and now that they have KCP back. So wins and losses aren't necessarily the most important part of their season. It's how these young guys develop, and we're gonna have to just keep watching.
Yeah, and Kyle Kuzma had another nice offensive game as well. He was in the closing lineup. Julius Randle finally broke out a little bit as they came back from a 20-point deficit and then weren't able to seal the deal late. Let's get to Memphis now. I think the big takeaway from them, 2-0, but two nice wins at home against the Pels, and then they really blew out the Warriors. It's just that Marc Gasol and Mike Conley look just as good as ever. And if that's the case, these guys, even with all their competition, I think are going to be a playoff team, because those two guys are really just that good.
They are, and Conley was an important part of the Grizzlies' success, even though in the game against the Warriors, he didn't shoot too well from the field. He was able to penetrate. He was able to draw a bunch of fouls too. And Gasol was awesome. 34 points, 14 rebounds, and just destructive out there. But where I've been very impressed with Memphis, beyond just their general competitiveness, and that's been over, it's not been overblown, but it's been talked about a lot because of grit and grind and everything like that. But the way that they dealt with Jermichael Green's injury, you know, that's a pretty big setback in the first game. Not the easiest guy for them to replace with the way their roster shakes out.
Yeah, especially against Golden State, too. A switch guy like that, you really need him.
Exactly. And so they were able to get contributions from all over. Dylan Brooks was huge in their first game against the Pels. And another big part of this is Chandler Parsons was one of the worst players in the league last year. And he probably won't be, at least in the near term, the guy they signed or intended to have when they signed.
Yeah.
But if he can be a reliable rotation player for them who can create a little bit and hit some catch and shoot shots, great. That is an exceedingly valuable thing for them.
Marc Gasol also just completely tore up the Warriors to the tune of 34 points on Saturday. It's just a really impressive game for him. And they were able to get Steph Curry in foul trouble. And they've been able to get by with Aaron Harrison playing at the two so far as well. And they have enough quality depth. And it just seems like when they bring these guys in, like Jarrell Martin, you know, it somehow just doesn't seem to kill them the way it kills these other teams when you bring in guys who maybe aren't as good individually. Let's get to Minnesota, 2-1 after a game we'll probably still be talking about all year. You want to just like talk about that game a little bit?
It was exciting. It went in a lot of different directions. And a couple of different things that really stood out. One, this is more on the Oklahoma City side, but we're talking about the game. Russell Westbrook, just the way that hole worked out. Actually, I'll save that for then. But Andrew Wiggins is just such a fascinating player because of the positives he brings and sometimes the negatives. And he got both of those in the final few minutes, had this spectacular spin move that led to a basket, then took a bad shot. And then I think he had a tip dunk or tip in.
Yeah.
And then he hits a banked game winner because that's just the way things work now.
Yeah. OKC, if you have the other team coming at you and it's tied in the last 10 seconds of a classic game, just don't let the guy shoot from 38 feet. just let him get a dunk, because you know that 38 footer apparently is going to go in, even if you have to bank it in. Yeah, Tibbs after the game actually said he liked Wiggins' activity. That tip in late was pretty good. He did that right to left spin move that he used to do every single time as a rookie, so it didn't work very often, but now he busted out a lot less often. And then that play you mentioned too, where they were going to him more late, but he like waved everyone out of the way so he could go at Russell Westbrook, and then just took like a terrible turn. I don't think like him going at Westbrook one-on-one is really a great matchup. Karl Towns had a nice game as well. He has done a good job because they haven't been running a ton of like post-ups for him really, and I don't think they're going to work with the shooting that they have on the floor necessarily, but he's just been finding ways, and this is something that Jim Peterson was talking about on the broadcast, to just get on the offensive glass, come off screens, hit a pick and pop three, you know, get a cut along the baseline or off a drive, get out in transition. Like, he's found ways to score and be efficient still. Had a season high, I think he was in the high 20s in points on this one. I would like to see them go to him more, although they do run an ATO for him a lot that really just kills opposing centers, where they just set a baseline screen for him to come out to the right corner and shoot a three, and just like no center can deal with that. Like, the teams probably will end up scouting that and just switching it, but like Steven Adams is not going to get through a screen to guard Karl Anthony Towns in the corner. And it's also impressive though that Towns, because he doesn't really shoot a jump shot, he shoots a set shot, it's kind of harder to shoot that coming off screens, that he actually has the footwork to do that. I do think they're gonna have to find a way to deal with other teams not guarding Taj Gibson. Like, Carmelo Anthony just didn't guard Taj Gibson, but the thing is with this Minnesota team, I think we're going to see this as well. And they also have played against three really good defensive teams. They played against the Spurs and the Jazz. And then this Oklahoma City team has a lot of defensive talent. I don't know if they're a great defensive team yet. And they still have been able to score okay. I think they're 13th in offense despite playing those teams. And so I think it's always going to look ugly for these guys. Like, there's going to be a lot of double teams. There's going to be guys not getting guarded. They're going to take tough shots. They're probably going to have some turnovers. But I think at the end of the day, they just have so much talent that they're going to score efficiently anyway. They'll get on the offensive glass, they'll get out in transition, they're going to just score on guys anyway, you know, even if they're closely guarded. So like, throughout most of the first half in particular, I'm like, man, like, Oklahoma City is like kicking these guys' ass, they're getting way better shots. And then you look down and Minnesota had a 5-point lead at the end of the first half.
Two other things I wanted to mention. The play that Towns scored on in the last minute was a type of play that basically no other center can do, where he did a pump fake, a drive, and then basically a floater. Was just filth. His touch is unbelievable. And then the other one is, before the game on Sunday, Tibbs was more willing to go to those lineups with Jimmy Butler at power forward. Some of that was, you know, you dance with the ones who brought you, and they had that comeback against the Spurs when they didn't have Taj Gibson in. But his willingness to go to those lineups is still a welcome change.
Yeah, and Jamal Crawford has been solid for them too. He beat the Jazz with a ridiculous three-pointer off a baseline out of bounds, just going into the corner and shooting like a fadeaway three over, I think it was Tabo Sefolosha, that put them up three with 25 seconds left. So that was pretty good play. And I think like their bench play has been reasonably decent so far. That was a concern going in. Let's get to New Orleans now. I think what I've liked is that the concerns to me about AD and Cousins playing together offensively, they've started to quell those concerns for me. Both those guys are getting plenty of shots. In the game before this one, I think it was against the Warriors, both of them had 35 points, 14 rebounds, and 5 assists in the same game. And both of those guys' usage rates are through the roof. In this game against the Lakers, Cousins didn't score quite as well, but I think they could both potentially average 25 a game, which is pretty impressive. And it really is more about the guys around them, because they've been using them in creative ways. They've been letting them work off the dribble, screen for each other. They'll start guys in the corner, like they're running like wide pin downs for AD coming out of the corner at times. Like, they're really running a pretty similar offense to what you would run if you were just playing more with like a stretch four or even a combo forward at the four, but just having those guys be in those positions. And their skill level is so high, and they can both shoot out there too, so they have to be guarded, that I think they really have been able to find ways for those guys to attack extremely well.
DeMarcus Cousins has also looked more engaged on defense to me. You could think back to the 5 blocks in the first quarter of the game against Memphis, but just overall, he's been more engaged in that end. And they also got a big closing kick in their game against the Lakers on Sunday from Etwan Moore. Moore hit a couple of just absolutely massive shots, including a 3 with Lonzo right on him. And then he had a mid-range shot, which was also important in terms of securing the lead, because they had this big lead and then blew it and then went back out on the Lakers. And yeah, beating the Lakers isn't any great shakes, but I like the certain parts of the way that they did that.
I'm also pleased, too, that they're able to get Jameer Nelson. I think Nelson would have had other opportunities where he could have gotten more playing time, but he signed, and immediately they didn't even have, like, a uniform with his number on it. The press release said he will wear number 1 in his first game and then 14 in all future games. So maybe they just, like, didn't have an extra 4 available, so they just had to put 1 on his jersey for this game. But he was playing in crunch time. He hit a big 3 in the face of Kyle Kuzma off a switch that really helped ice it in this one. They closed out with Nelson, Drew Holiday, Moore at the 3, as the Lakers didn't really have anyone who was bothering them at the 3 who had a lot of size. And the Lakers actually were playing with 3 guards as well. And then obviously Cousins and Davis. So, I mean, that lineup, if they want to go to that a lot, I think that's a lineup that really has enough shooting where as long as there isn't a big 3 on the other team that's really going to kill them, then they maybe get in a little more trouble if they have to go to like a Darius Miller or Dante Cunningham. That things offensively, they could be pretty difficult to stop. And it is going to be a little awkward. And I'm surprised that Nelson signed there, given the fact that Rondo is going to come back at some point. And maybe they're just going to play Drew exclusively at the 2, and then Nelson will just be the backup point guard. But I think Nelson is better than Rondo. Maybe in the playoffs, Rondo would be better, but you know, I don't see them making the playoffs. But you know, at least they got this win against the Lakers. They needed that one pretty badly. I'm just, you know, this still seems like a snake bit franchise. Oh, wait, sorry. We're trying to be positive. All right, let's bring a mongoose out or something.
Along the possibly positive lines, who would you rather have for this season? Jameer Nelson, Rajon Rondo, or Tim Frazier?
I'd say Nelson would probably be the number one, just because, especially on this team, just because he's still an excellent spot-up shooter, and the other two guys aren't. And so they really, like, Rondo, you know, he needs a ton of shooting around him, and a team that doesn't really have much passing, maybe he can help on, right? So, but they have, I mean, especially the way they're playing, and I credit Elvin Gentry for his creativity. We haven't seen that much of that the first couple of years, but he's been able to get to that here. And also, I think a big part of that has been getting Chris Finch from the Nuggets. You know, I'm not sure how much of that these new offensive ideas are his ideas, but you know, the Nuggets looked great with him last year, haven't looked as great so far, frankly, offensively this year. And now the Pelicans, I've liked the creativity that they've shown. But yeah, just having that spacing from Nelson, I think he's a much better fit on this team, certainly offensively. And then, you know, I don't think like either he or Rondo is any good defensively anymore.
Pelicans Blazers on Tuesday is going to be a very interesting game, just to see how these two teams handle each other.
Let's get to the Thunder, who now are perhaps a surprising 1-2. Nice win against the Knicks, although it took them a little bit of a while to break that one open. I guess it was kind of a blow up by halftime. And then lost at the Jazz on Saturday, kind of an earlier day back-to-back on Sunday against the Wolves, but who were also coming off of a back-to-back and had maybe a little longer flight. So actually, no, it's probably about the same. We don't need to get into geography too much here, but this is a long podcast. Sometimes it happens. I think, though, you know, I'm not like that worried about them necessarily. And I think, you know, those 4 guys, Paul George has not shot it well yet. But the one thing I have liked about them, since we're being positive, is I think they're finally getting a few system buckets here and there. Like, and a lot of them come off of the wide pin down. A wide pin down is, instead of starting a guy at the block and having him pop out, is more of a floppy look, which they run plenty of too for Paul George. He's one of the hardest to deal with on that play. They start the guy in the corner and set a screen for him to come up to the wing. But especially when they know that guys are going to switch, Paul George actually has had a couple of nice cuts. And I thought Russell Westbrook's passing in this game was actually very impressive, especially finding Steven Adams on the roll. He had a huge first half. And then Russ, we still saw like clutch Russ from last year down the end, even though it ended up not being enough.
2 big things for me from them so far that are, well, you alluded to both of them, but one is I have heartily enjoyed Steven Adams so far this year. There's all these questions about, you know, so many mouths to feed. Steven Adams just, he does his own thing. He fights defensively, fights on the offensive glass, gets buckets when he has the opportunity, fits in really well with a lot of those ideas. And they still need to figure out what they want to do at backup center, but at least they have their starting center. And in this game, I thought it was a very telling moment moment that we saw clutch Russ. We saw him make some absolutely insane threes, terrible shots, but he made those. And then on the last possession of the game, they're down by 2 points. He is driving, has a little bit of space, and makes the pass to Melo, who was open for three and makes the three. And that might just be his emotional intelligence, you know, knowing it's a long season. But
I think it was a set play, actually. I think the play was, yeah. Yeah, he at least was fine doing it.
Yeah, his muscle memory didn't take over, so I'm calling that a win.
Yeah, and during the regular season, too, I think even in the last couple Durant years, when KD was healthy, he did focus a little bit more on distributing. But I think he understands, maybe he's trying to learn from this idea, as Draymond Green talked trash to him, that he shot KD out of town. And Melo, at least, is probably there for another year. And so they're trying to get Paul George to opt in as well. They're going to have to play better for sure. And they also are going to need to find a fifth guy. You know, Robertson, we're getting a little negative here, but this is a good team. We can be a little negative on a good team. Like, just horrendously airballed 2 free throws. And I think, like, Donovan will really lose confidence in him when he goes to the foul line and has trouble. I don't think Robertson has even hit a three yet. He has not looked comfortable taking them, even from the corners. He appears to have regressed, if anything, after those playoffs last year. And now more pressure of them having guys who can replace him. And then they tried to go to Abrines, and I think he'll be better in other matchups, but the Wolves attacked Abrines with Andrew Wiggins getting into the post, with Jimmy Butler getting into the post, and so they had to go away from him. They actually went with Ray Felton, who's a little bit stouter, and those units looked okay. Felton has been evolved in a pretty decent three-point shooter, but the hope, I think, maybe eventually is that Patrick Patterson can be a guy who comes in. He was probably would be their fourth best player when healthy, but he hasn't looked healthy yet, and that's a concern. So these guys are going to take a little while to hit their stride. You know, Melo and PG have got to shoot a little bit better. Melo and Russ and PG all take a few too many bad shots. Maybe they can excise those out a little bit. So I think there's still a lot of hope for these guys. I wouldn't be panicking at 1-2, and these last two games have been against some pretty good teams, although in fairness, teams that may be below them in the West hierarchy, at least as we expected coming in.
But it's a long season, and we are going to temporarily suspend the power of positivity for the Phoenix Suns, because the Suns have some news, and we have to talk about that in the way that we usually talk about news.
Yeah, and the reason that this happened was they were outscored by 92 points over their first three games. Got beat at home by the Lakers, who have looked pretty terrible aside from that. The defense has just been an absolute complete disaster. I mean, I can't think of ever having seen worse pick and roll defense than we saw against the Lakers in that game with Lonzo, who is not some great scorer at this point. Like, him putting up those type of points he had a few nice shots, but they were just providing no resistance on these plays where he's getting the rim. And there was just no excuse for it, because it was obvious that they just kept doing the same thing over and over again. You know, Tyson Chandler is just kind of sticking to Brooke Lopez. They had no activity. Devin Booker just is like one of the worst help defenders in the NBA. I mean, there's a play where he was guarding Corey Brewer in the weak side corner. Your job when you're guarding the guy in the weak side corner is generally to come and help. And Corey Brewer is like a career 28% three-point shooter. And so Lonzo comes off the pick and roll. You should be primed to help when you know that your pick and roll coverage is, hey, Tyson Chandler is going to stick to Brooke Lopez. And Lonzo just comes right down the lane for a layup. And Devin Booker just never moves from the block. And it's Corey Brewer that you're guarding, right? Like, just it really, and we saw plays like that on every single possession, really. And so I think there had to be a concern, both in terms of this team's spirit with how they had defended, and also just the development of these young players, right? Even though McDonough got a contract extension, that's really the important thing. And it seems clear, given the way they've defended, that these young players just are not learning the habits on the defensive end. And that's why a change should probably be made. But, they're the other suits on their bench are not exactly filled with defensive gurus, if you get my drift.
Yeah, it sounds like they also fired three other coaches, but only two of them were player development, including Mehmet Okur, which is, you know, he's been around the league for a while now. It's a little bit sad. But the Suns are just in this weird situation, because
hold on. Let me get to that, because maybe you didn't see where I was going. Jay Triano is going to be the interim coach. Triano presided over two last ranked defenses in Toronto. And then they also have Ty Corbin on the bench. Was he part of one of the guys who got axed or no?
I don't think he was.
And his Utah Jazz in his last year there were, you guessed it, the 30th ranked defense. KP noted that one in his piece. I remembered Triano. I didn't remember Corbin. So probably not going to look up necessarily anytime soon. And it really seems like, you know, this is a team that other than getting out in transition didn't really have any kind of an identity. There wasn't really any kind of accountability, especially for Booker, who really has kind of gotten the royal treatment as the franchise savior. And he's been a good scorer, but and all the players love Watson, but they also, you know, maybe that's too much of a problem because he's not able to hold them accountable. And so they definitely need some new blood in there. I'm just not sure that like Jay Triano for the rest of the year is going to solve anything. And I do, I mean, if this is the plan, right, they're going to be a bad team. We get that. You know, that they elected not to use any cap space to try to compete this year, even to just sign like a 1-year deal or something. You know, they have all these young guys they want to develop. They gave McDonough a contract extension for executing this strategy. So it doesn't really make sense, even though it has been an embarrassing start, that they would just move on from Watson because like really like the one of the, it's not like these coaches on the bench are like some great option to improve the defense and like help you compete a little more. I mean, it just seems more like it's like Robert Sarver was pissed off and embarrassed, so he decided to fire Watson.
To quote a different coach from the same state, they are who we thought they were. That, I mean, it's not that big a jump. I mean, yeah, they've been awful defensively, and some of that is, you know, guys that have a rep but haven't really done that, haven't really been as dominant in recent years. You and I talked about this with Eric Bledsoe, that I was excited to see Bledsoe against Lonzo, and you're like, yeah, but Eric Bledsoe hasn't defended like that in a while, and it's true, and he didn't in that game, of course. And so you have all of that coming together. It's just like, well, what did you think was going to happen? And I don't know where you go from here, also because this is an important evaluation year for them, just in terms of figuring out where they want to go from here. Some of the in the draft is always about opportunity, you know, the best player available and things like that, but they have young talent all over the place, and so it's who's good, who's not, and what strengths and weaknesses do you need to consider when you're building this team. And when we were, before we got the Watson news and we were going for the positives, I had two positives that I was going to bring up, and also I'll talk about them now. One is I like that Watson was not starting Marquese Chris, because Marquese Chris was not one of their best players that year, and I think it's good to give TJ Warren the opportunity. And the other one was, there was a play that I really liked from Josh Jackson. Zach Lowe had a nice tweet today about how passing is a good way of calibrating which rookies get it. He had a drive, and he didn't do a drive and then a pass to the corner, because that's an easier line. Guys do that all the time. It was a drive and then a kick out above the break on the opposite side, and he saw it the whole way. I think the guy missed the three. I think it was TJ Warren. Missed the three, but it was a nice recognition, and I enjoyed that he had that read and that he was able to do it, because it's, you know, it's a tough line.
Yeah, they are starting Warren and Jackson together, which makes some sense. So it's the two guys that they have the, well, I mean, I guess you could say that Bender and Chris, they have the biggest investment in there, but Warren and Jackson, in theory, a part of their future as well. And I think they really got to figure out what's going on at power forward here, because there are a lot of bigs coming up in this draft. They need a long-term center as well, and then they need a long-term point guard. Eric Bledsoe tweeting, you know, I don't want to be here anymore. And John Gambadora has kind of been all over this story that hey, Bledsoe likes Watson, that maybe that tweet was the result of Watson being fired as opposed to what got Watson fired. But, and Gambadora also says that Bledsoe wants to be moved and will be moved at some point. And I mean, you know, this whole, like, people always get angry when, like, players, like, make trade requests and stuff, like, and probably better to just go through your agent. But I don't really mind players making a trade request. Like, as someone who watches the whole league, it's totally understandable that players would want to be out of these miserable situations. Remember, too, that it wasn't Earl Watson's decision last year to sit Eric Bledsoe down for the entire rest of the season and try and tank for a better draft pick. I would imagine that as a coach, he was against that, and he wasn't really happy with how that would have helped the culture and the winning. And maybe, you know, if they keep Bledsoe around and they win 32 games last year instead of whatever it was, 24, it probably wouldn't have gotten that high. But, you know, if they get to high 20 or something, maybe Watson isn't fired right now. There's still a perception change that happens when you sit those guys and your record is your record. So I still think Watson probably was the least exciting coach in the NBA from my perspective. And I think, you know, he wasn't helping this team along. So I see it from that perspective, but I also don't see it from an overall organizational philosophy perspective. Like, what changed in the first three games to make you think that this guy wasn't the coach when he was before?
Yeah, he seemed overmatched, but that wasn't really what sabotaged this season so far.
So I'm about to get married, and as a result, my thoughts have turned to what I am going to wear and what my groomsmen are going to wear. And thankfully, I have this relationship with Indochino. I've got confidence in them to make a great made-to-measure suit that's way better than what you're going to get as a generic off-the-rack suit. I might even buy those for my groomsmen. None of them are listening, so shouldn't take away the surprise. But as you guys have heard me remark before, I'm about 6'6", and I just got kind of an oddly shaped body. So if I get a suit off the rack that fits me in the shoulders, it doesn't fit me in the chest and in the stomach. It looks like a tent on me. Then they tailor it, and it's never really fits right, right? It's not made for someone like me. Indochino is made for me. You can choose from hundreds of top quality fabrics, personalize your suit, you can get monograms, customize the lapel, the linings, whatever you want. It's easy to just do your measurements yourself at home, or you can go into any Indochino showroom and get it done yourself. Right now, my listeners can get Indochino's best deal ever, $359 for any premium suit when you enter that code CAPSPACE, easy to remember because we talk about it all the time on the program, at checkout. 50% off the regular price of a made-to-measure premium suit, plus shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code CAPSPACE for any suit, just $359 and free shipping. An incredible deal for a suit that's going to fit you better than anything off the rack ever could. My Indochino suits are always the first ones that I wear when I'm going to games. I've recommended them to many people, even in my personal life. They all have thought they're great. Indochino.com, promo code CAPSPACE. Let them know that you came from us. Let's get to the Blazers. 2-1, playing very well. A number of things I've really liked about them. They are going to their real starting lineup, as I call it, Aminu and Harkless at forwards, not starting Evan Turner, which I think is good, although Turner, they still think of him, I guess, as their best defensive player. They had him going up against Giannis. I don't think any of their other guys were doing much better, although maybe they could have provided some more size in that 44-point game, but they, of course, absolutely destroyed Phoenix on the road. They had a nice, pretty easy win at the expense of Indiana. And then on the second night of a back-to-back, were pretty competitive against Milwaukee. Had a nice comeback from 5 points down in the last minute, and then just got Giannis at the end. I think really the biggest thing about them has been that they've defended pretty well so far, which if you saw their defense the first half of last year, is certainly a pleasant surprise.
That was one of the bigger elements during that stretch when they were super hot after getting Nurkic before he went down with the leg injury, was that they were a lot better defensively, and their offense is going to be there when they have Dame and CJ because those guys are phenomenal talents. And something else that I've enjoyed with them so far is that they've been, and some of this is, you know, opponents and everything else, they've been ridiculous on the offensive glass. They are at a 40.3 offensive rebound percentage right now, which is 8% up on the entire league.
Is that Nurkic doing most of the damage? I guess they missed Ed Davis a lot last year when he was out. I think he is an underrated part of their offensive rebound. I imagine Nurkic is involved in that as well.
Yeah, and also the fact that they have so many other guys that can just attack it at little moments. Like, yeah, I mean, Ed Davis had 11 rebounds in their game against the Bucks, and we've talked about the Bucks' offensive rebounding issues. Yeah, Davis, 3 or 4 offensive rebounds in all 3 of their games. So that helps.
That's impressive. The 6th ranked defense overall, playing 2 teams that really suck offensively, but that's not the end of the world. Actually, but when we're not going to do too many of these stats here because they're not that significant, but once we start getting it, we're actually going to use Ben Falk's site, Cleaning the Glass, which has the actual possession counts and in addition to a ton of other stuff. So we might have a little bit different numbers than you have at NBA.com in terms of the raw numbers because he actually counts possessions by the play-by-play instead of estimating and has a bunch of other cool stuff. You know, Ben from having worked with the Sixers and Blazers before, they're also closing off their own defensive glass. That's been a great part of their solid defense to date. And they're not fouling at all, which has really helped. They never are going to turn teams over. That's just not how Terry Stotts plays defense. Yusuf Nurkic is going to hang back on the pick and roll as they have done since time immemorial with guys like Robin Lopez. So they're not going to force turnovers, but so far at least they've been effective. And we'll see whether, you know, they're going to just try to force the right kind of shots and then hope that other teams don't hit as many of them. We'll see if this holds up when they get into playing some better teams. And they did struggle against the Bucks late in that game, and they really just had no answers at all for Giannis. So they're always going to be limited a little bit by their personnel. You know, if they can just be around average, defensively, I think that'll be enough for this team to make the playoffs.
Let's move on to the Sacramento Kings. The Kings are 1-2. Their win was against the Mavericks, actually, in their first road game of the year. They were close against the Rockets, who were on the tail end of a back-to-back, but they look good in that game in their home opener. And I've been encouraged by the fight that they've shown, you know, that they have been really trying out there. They have a lot of guys, so they can roll through them. And De'Aaron Fox is still a rookie, but, you know, he's had some moments to show, like, that he's a talent and that he's a part of their future.
Yeah, the Kings only giving up 101.6 points per 100. That's 11th in the league. They played the Mavs, who were pretty miserable offensively so far. They didn't have Dennis Smith in that game. But they also played Houston and Denver, who were two of last season's top offenses. So to be, I mean, I think if this team is going to have any type of modicum of success this year, it's going to come on defense. It's going to come from playing hard. And you mentioned that also the fact that George Hill was able to have a nice 20-point game, really efficient against the Mavs, was good. He had not looked good to me so far coming off that toe injury from last year. And I mean, Fox has just looked good, right? I mean, he's not like a classic finisher in the sense that like he gets great extension or he double pumps. He gets so much elevation, even though he has two hands on the ball and he usually finishes with his left, that he's able to bounce off of guys and finish. And he's still a terror in transition to me. He's got this right to left crossover coming down in semi-transition that'll just burn guys and he can get to the rim. Scored a lot of his points in garbage time against the Nuggets last night, but still, I mean, to have be scoring in double figures, I also think that some of their best lineups could potentially be Fox and Hill together to just get a little bit more playmaking on the floor, whereas maybe Fox isn't quite ready to be the number one guy yet, and Hill functions best as a secondary playmaker who still gets to work a little bit as well. But compared to like Buddy Hield or Bogdanovich, Hill is probably a better defender, and they need somebody who can attack off the dribble in this game. Justin Jackson actually started their last game as well, kind of got the Keith Bogans, but you know, at least it played a little bit. They've been going more with Garrett Temple as their three for the bulk of the minutes, though. But I think it's been an encouraging start to me for the Kings. I think they're always going to struggle to some degree on offense. I mean, their game against Denver was really rough, and they're 28th in offense, only 96.1 points per 100. And I'd expect them to be in the bottom five all year in terms of offense. But I think overall, if they can compete this year, that they can feel good about that, at least defensively.
Yeah, I'm good with that. San Antonio, 2-0, including that early win against the Wolves that we talked about, that we covered on the Twitter NBA show. And the two big takeaways for me from that game, I'll leave one of them to you because I know it's something that you've been focusing on, is I've been impressed with DeJounte Murray's defensive potential. He is never is a strong word. He probably will never be the linchpin of a dominant offense, just especially without his jump shot. But he can be positive in that way, and he can get in passing lanes. I like his instincts. I like his athleticism. And if you play him, let's say, the rest of this year, next year, with Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard, you can do some nasty stuff defensively.
Yeah, even without Leonard, they shut down Minnesota pretty good. And then obviously the Bulls only had 77 points against them. The Bulls probably going to be the worst offense in the NBA this year, though there are plenty of candidates for that, especially even Atlanta now. Schroeder's going to miss some time. That ankle injury he had looked like it was going to be pretty ugly in that Brooklyn game today. But still, I mean, these guys are always going to defend it. And it's kind of a reminder, too, even with Kawhi out, of how different regular season NBA basketball is against the majority of teams, even with this new NBA where everyone wants to pace and space and take a ton of threes. If you just have enough size on the floor and then you can force teams to go into that size as the Spurs do and then not turn it over and get defensive rebounds, like, you're going to be successful against a lot of these teams. A lot of these teams are just not going to be able to score against them. You mentioned Murray. Danny Green had a wonderful opening game guarding Jimmy Butler. And then Rudy Gay has looked pretty solid as well in the first couple, just athletically getting a few dunks. We talked about him maybe as an overlooked six-man candidate. If he can keep this up, we'll see. It's only been a couple of games. We'll see if he's able to play enough minutes or enough games. The Spurs will clearly be conservative with him. But certainly, again, looking just fine in San Antonio. And when Kawhi gets back, you would expect them to be right up there in the upper echelon of the West.
The last team, the Utah Jazz, they're 2-1, and I have been impressed with a lot of different things with the Jazz. Their depth was something that we focused on as being a strength of their team. Just they have a lot of good players, that especially they were able to get them on reasonable contracts, guys like Thabo Sefolosha. And Alec Burks was not a guy we ever mentioned in that list because with the injuries that he's had, you never really assumed for him. You didn't game plan for Alec Burks being a part of it. That was a very encouraging part of their first game. And then the other big takeaway, which relates to Alec Burks, because he was on the line for a lot of these, was their bench has been absolutely annihilating people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Ekpe Udoh's plus minus is back in full force. He bragged about himself as one of the best defensive players in the world in training camp this year. He is backing that up completely. Derek Favors, I mean, they were getting away with him guarding Melo on Saturday. He was doing a totally good job with that. The pressure that they're able to put out on the floor in pick and rolls with Favors and Udoh together is excellent. Burks, whom you mentioned, 21 PR in three games, 67% true shooting, and not a huge usage either. He's not taking bad shots. 21% usage, which for someone in his role is pretty good. Tabo Sefolosha has looked at least competent enough offensively that he can be out there on defense. And then maybe Joe Ingles is on fire. He's 85% true shooting. He is 12 of 19 so far on three-pointers. Really impressive there. He's taken 19 of his 26 shots from downtown. And they have great balance as well. This is an interesting stat for you. Ricky Rubio, Rudy Gobert, and Joe Ingles lead the team with 44 points scored each over three games, and Derek Favors has 43 points in three games. So, yeah, that's some balance for you.
That is, and I want to give a couple of stats just on their bench because it's been pretty impressive. And so you're dealing, of course, with small sample sizes here. They have a plus 56.9 net rating in the minutes Ekpe Udoh and Alec Burks have played together. That's 28 minutes. Plus 72.6 in Udoh's minutes with Tabo Sefolosha. And shout out to Ethan Sherwood-Strauss, who has been, I'm sure, is absolutely delighted by the Ekpe Udoh renaissance as somebody who believed in his defensive potential probably even before Ekpe did, in all honesty. And he's been great. He really has been.
Yeah, Ethan tweeted out this Warriors World article from 2012, and it was all about Udoh's defense. And to illustrate his defense, this is like before anyone was like doing like videos, he had like 25 screenshots, like all from one possession, in which he just like narrated what happened in the possession. NBA writing has come a long way. Certainly mine has since I started writing it in 2012. But yeah, I actually am living basically like a mile north of Ethan now. We're like just off the same street as soon as I move next week. So I'll have to invite him over for some Ekpe Udoh watch parties. And last good news too, it was fear on Saturday night that Rodney Hood had torn his Achilles. He had to be carried off the floor, was clutching at the back of his ankle where you would think it was an Achilles. And usually when something like that happens, you're like, oh, well, if they think it's an Achilles, it always ends up being that. And then as it turned out, it was just a calf strain, and he is actually like questionable to play later this week. So really good news for Rodney Hood. I mean, he definitely has a lot of nagging injuries and it's been a problem so far in his career, but at least he avoided like the major one, especially for a guy who was extension eligible. Not clear if the Jazz really made much of an offer to him, but it's at least good to see that he is will have a chance to come back and be healthy pretty soon here. So are you in a sunshiny mood here where all this positivity, is it just like bursting out of your heart right now?
Well, I mean, I could get positivity just generally. Like I did League Pass Games of the Week today, and I get excited at the beginning of the year because there's just so much going on. And this is not the greatest slate of games actually for this coming week, but there's always something worth watching and there's always something worth seeing. And you get games like not only the Wolves Thunder game, which was just a delight, but Bucks Blazers was a blast. And we've had a lot of those this week, and the voyage of discovery for a lot of these teams is just going to be exciting for the next week and moving forward, of course. And so keeping an eye on that. And then I've been thinking, you know, I'm working on this, it's like a 1400 word piece that I've already written for The Athletic that's coming out about the teams that I think are going to be the rising title contenders in future years. And so I've been watching some of these games with that in mind, and I like thinking about where this league is going right now.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that later this week once it comes out. But I hated this podcast. I can't be relentlessly positive. It's not in my nature. I'm really looking forward to talking about whose rookie options might get declined tomorrow.
Yeah, a mix is a little bit more fun, but I enjoyed this too.
It's going to get edited out when I truncate the silences, but there was like a 15-second pause there. as Danny was left speechless by my hate. All right, thanks so much for listening, you guys. Don't forget our sponsors, new sponsor, rxbar.com/capspace. Use that capspace code, get 25% off your first order. Let them know that you came from us. And we will be back on Monday. Talk to you all then.